Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to Nation Billing, where it all goes down. Tonight's topic is the politics. Hey, that's a real catchy topic, man. Hey, everybody, welcome everybody on the show tonight. We have South Regional Student Minister Robert Mohammed. Also, we got Brother Jamil on the phone, and we got our host. I'm thinking about my show, guys. We got our host on, Sister Gidget. What's up, Sister Gidget? What's going on over there?
Assalamu alaikum, brother DJ Black Caesar. How are you this evening?
Alaikum salam, sister. Everything is going pretty good, man. Everything is going good. What's up on your end, man?
Oh, nothing. Just trying to fight these allergies, but I'm so honored tonight because we have some very distinguished panel family. I don't have panel guests, so I'm ready to get into this subject because it's very lengthy per my research, and I know Brother Robert has a lot that he wants to share with us, so we're going to get started, and we're going to break a minute and take some questions, and I'm ready to rock and roll. How about you, DJ Black Caesar?
Hey, you know what? We got Brother Jamil on the phone also. You forgot about him.
No. I didn't forget about Brother Jamil. Absolutely not. I was about to introduce him.
I could never
forget my beloved Brother Jamil from Cincinnati. What? Is this mic open?
Yes, ma'am.
Assalamu alaikum, Brother
Jamil. This is Gidget, DJ Black Caesar. How are you, my brother?
I'm doing good, sir. Doing good. Thank you for asking.
All right. Yes, sir. Thank you for everybody here in the studio. And I'm also very glad that in just a few moments I should hear the mellifluous tones of the voice of my dear brother, the Southwestern Regional Student Minister of the Nation of Islam, Brother Robert Muhammad. Really, Sister Gidget, I'm glad that you had me here tonight so I could hear. But really, when you hear Brother Robert Muhammad, you're hearing one of the nation's foremost political analysts. And as he hosts his weekly radio show, Connect the Dots, there in Houston, can I name the call letters the station he appears on?
Yes, KTSU in Houston.
There you go. And as he appears on that radio station every Wednesday afternoon on Connect the Dots, he gives some of the most far-reaching and deep political analysis to be found anywhere in the country. So I'll be glad to add what I add, but what I'll be adding will be like the hand claps in the Motown studio. You know?
Oh, okay.
So you joining
the fanfare along with me, right?
I'm holding the tambourine, talking shoo-wop, 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 doobie doo-wop. And Brother Robert is carrying the melody and the harmony and the rhythm, but I got the meanest shoo-wop in the whole recording business. So let's get ready for tonight. I'm very honored to be here, very glad, because politics is a very key subject. So I don't want to tip your hand in introducing the subject, but I'm very honored to be here, and I thank you very, very much.
And we thank you, Brother Jamil, one of our very distinguished administrators of nation building. Our father of wisdom is what I call him, even though he doesn't like that title. It's his because I gave it to him, and he has no choice but to take it. So thank you, Brother Jamil. We are honored to have you with us as well. So I'm going to get started. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, I bear witness that there is no God but Allah, and I bear witness that Muhammad is his messenger. We thank Allah for the scriptures, and we certainly thank Allah for leaving in our midst our leader, teacher, and guide, the Most Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, who has never ceased to amaze me. But I don't know about the rest of y'all, but last couple of months I've been watching the minister, and I just cannot for the life of me figure out how this man, who is almost 80 years of age, number one, keeps looking younger and younger every time I see him. Number two, how does he move the way he moves? And if you don't think this is the man of God, there's something wrong with y'all. And I want to extend the greetings to my listening audience. I want to extend greetings to my Kenyan family, Ujambu. I want to extend the greetings to my Nigerian cousins, Cousin Bunsue and his work crew listen faithfully every Friday morning their time. So for the distinguished 24 of you all, thank you so much for your love and your support on the internet and going back and looking into the archives. And before we get started, I also want to congratulate our brother Robert, because you just celebrated your 25-year tenure in the Nation of Islam. Sir, and why don't you share with us the event of your night of giving the flowers while you live. Why don't you give us some insight on what took place?
Assalamu alaikum.
Walaikum salam, sir.
First and foremost, let me thank you, Sister Gidget, and of course, Black Caesar, the godfather of Mississippi. I want to thank you for being such a wonderful co-host and producing the show. And of course, I'm very happy and honored to be joined on this radio show with a man who I feel, with the gifts that God has given him, has no peer or equal. It's my brother Jamil Muhammad.
Absolutely.
And I pray Allah that will increase him every day, preserve his life, so that he may give more and more and more of that God-given gift to his mighty nation, so that we may be that which Allah intended for us to be when he made his appearance and himself known July 4th, 1930. By the grace of Master Fahd Muhammad, the exalted Christ, and through the guidance of their apostle, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. Before I begin, let me bring to you, Sister Gidget, Brother Black Caesar, and Brother Jamil, greetings from the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan of Assalamu alaikum.
Walaikum salam,
salam,
sir.
Please return the greetings to the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan.
Please return the greetings.
I will. Thank you so much. I had the awesome occasion of being with him in Baton Rouge, which, of course, is in the Southwest region. He made an appearance at Southern University, his first speech there, or major speech there, since 1992. So it's been almost 20 years. But we, in Houston, we celebrated 25 years of me being in the ministry here in Houston since 1987. It was a wonderful, wonderful event. But it wasn't about me, it was really about the we, because I can't of myself do nothing. And it really is the support of persons like yourself, Sister Gidget, and others who throughout the years have been very forgiving and merciful as I got some on-the-job training to grow into the helper of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan that I, too, am attempting to become. So we celebrated 25 years of being on our post as a student minister, and it was a wonderful occasion. What was so wonderful about it was the fact that many of the children that were born in the mosque over these 25 years performed and were part of the program, which says to me what the Honorable Louis Farrakhan said at the First Savior's Day, in the video that we know and can call the rebirth of the nation. We said in so many words, I'm just paraphrasing, that, you know, if you want to get rid of the Nation of Islam, you're going to have to kill every man, woman, and child. So 25 years has given us an opportunity to bring people to recognize their own nature, because to use the word convert them is pure vanity. They're already that. They just have to be taught that, you know, that's what they are. And so many of those in the mosque, I have performed their weddings, and from that they've produced wonderful children. And for some of these children, many of these children, in fact, most of the children, I'm the only student minister that they've ever known.
That's
and
right.
So it was very wonderful to have them to open up in prayer, to do spoken word, to play the piano and the guitar and sing songs, and it was just very wonderful. And then we have other luminaries that came in, and they roasted and they toasted me, the national chairman of the Black United Front, Brother Kofi Tahaka, Roy Balanson, the editor and publisher of the African American News and Issues, Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee, Congressman Al Green. We received resolutions from the city, the state, from the federal government, and the congressional record. So just it was really wonderful. And everything they said about me in the roast was a lie. Well, none of it the truth. It was all a lie.
No, sir.
No, brother. Some of those stories are true. Some of those stories are true.
It was sure that was true. It was funny as it all get out. But nonetheless, we had Brother Jay DeLay, the voice of the Nation of Islam. He emceed the program. So, again, it was like a family reunion. Of course, I was toasted by my former student captain, always be my right-hand wingman, Brother Khalil Muhammad. We shared together 17 years of our work, and he got up and he did a tribute. And I thank Allah for that. And, of course, my first, if you will, person that ever stood up under my voice, Brother Fareed Muhammad, a.k.a. Fred.
Yes.
he was there. So, you know, I'm just grateful to Allah, you know, that we had that opportunity to get our flowers while we live. While I'm on that point and I'll close out, you know, let us not forget, and Brother Jamil will know these names, our brothers who have gone back to Allah, who are strong servants and helpers in Honorable Louis Farrakhan and his rebuilding of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's work, Brother Captain Sadiq Muhammad and Brother Minister Harold Muhammad, who have gone back to Allah, these great and mighty soldiers, shall never be forgotten as long as I have breath in my body. And I just wanted to make sure that we made a record on this program of their work and contribution, because once again, I can of myself do nothing, and without these kind of men that have gone before me, who walk with me, and who have helped the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, walking with him, securing him, representing him, we would not have this mighty holy nation that we have before us today. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. And we did pay homage to Brother Minister Harold and Brother Captain Sadiq when they transitioned.
May I just interject for one moment, please?
Sure. Yes, sir. Absolutely.
I think it's an appropriate juncture of the program to mention this, but last night at shortly after midnight in Buffalo, New York, we lost another of our great pioneer Muslims, a sister who was familiar to all at Mosque number 28 in St. Louis, where she was from, as the originator of the Believers Community Call. And you all may remember that every day during the month of Ramadan, the believers in St. Louis get together on a teleconference right after Fajr prayer, and they read the entire day's reading of the Quran during the month of Ramadan as a unit. And that has put quite a community in place in that city and around the country. The originator of that idea and concept was Sister Zeti Muhammad. Sister Zeti fought a long and valiant battle with cancer and finally succumbed to it last night. But we thank Allah for her, and we put her there with Brother Harold and with Brother Sadiq as mighty soldiers who gave their life and their work to the Nation of Islam. And we thank Allah for her. We pray that he will be pleased with her and comfort her family as well as the other family during this hour of loss. But now on to the work, because that is what they gave their lives for. They are not of the past. No, no. We may think that they are dead, but we perceive not. They are alive, but we just don't understand. So their work continues, and we need to continue as well.
Yes, sir. May Allah be pleased with all of our soldiers. That's a part of it. Okay. All right. So we're going to get off into our topic tonight, the politics of politics. Now, Brother Robert, I know you. Known you for a very, very long time. Not going to tell my age. But you're going to have to break it down in layman's terms for us. Okay, so, you know, take it easy on us, because as far as I'm concerned, hey, Robert Muhammad for president. That's how I feel about it. Okay, Brother Robert. And Brother Jamil. Brother Jamil, you're not slick. Don't be sitting up there trying to be all modest, because I know you are a brilliant brother, and you're known for that. So don't play us, okay? Brother Robert, I'm gonna ask you first. It's an election year, and I remember you know, and let me just share a little history. For those of us who grew up in the first resurrection of the Nation of Islam, under the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, we were not encouraged to participate in the political process. It was not something that, you know, we were taught to do as children, and we didn't see our parents do that. However, Minister Farrakhan, being who he is and being aware of the time, implemented voter registration in the Nation of Islam. And I remember, Brother Robert, when we were working on the LOC, you had commissioned me, twisting my arm, to register to vote because you wanted me to be able to deputize other people to get registered to vote. And so that was kind of like my first entry into politics. And I remember asking you, I was like, you know, we have a nation of our own. Why do we have to deal with this? And you elaborated on some other stuff. But it's one thing you said to me, and I don't know why, the little things you say to me stay with me. You said, Sister Gidget, politics is local. So I'm going to ask you tonight, elaborate on that, if you would, for us.
Well, Sister, first and foremost, what I said was all politics are local, and that is a saying of the former Speaker of the House of Representatives, the United States House of Representatives, Thomas Tip O'Neill of Massachusetts.
Massachusetts.
Who was making a statement that all politics are local. And that simply says that no matter what's going on over us on the federal level, where we saw the debate last night, no matter what's going on, in the end, it is the local people who are going to be affected and who are going to affect you if you don't do a good job. So all politics is local. If you go to Washington, D.C., and you're a senator or a congressman, if you cannot create some form of change or bring home some kind of largesse or some form of benefit for you being in office, and the local people will throw you out. So all politics is local because you want to make sure that you make a local impact, no matter if you're dealing with national or international politics, because in the end, it all boils down to the people that you have to report to. And in a constitutional republic, America is not a democracy. It is a constitutional republic, which simply says republic is that you elect representatives that represent you. And we as a people don't vote on everything. That would be a democracy in the ancient Athenian language of demos, meaning people, kratos, meaning rule. So it would simply say to us that the people rule, meaning that every one of us would vote on everything. But because we live in a constitutional republic, America is, we vote people in and they go and represent us under this federal system that we have, where there are two sovereign, if you will, entities. One is the federal government, and the other one are the state governments that make up these United States of America.
Yes, sir. Okay, so let's just step back a little bit in time, because I remember coming to the South in 1978, leaving South Central Los Angeles, where, how can I put it, the remnants of the civil rights movement did not necessarily impact my community, at least to my knowledge. I was only 12 years of age. I remember coming here to Houston and getting on the city bus with my cousin. And as we boarded the bus, political as she was even at that age of 14, we got on the bus and she said in her words, "Look at all those niggas at the back of the bus. What the hell did we die for?" And so she was very, very abreast of what was going on, you know, always ahead of her time, very wise. And so as we were talking and she was explaining to me about the bus boycott and everything that had taken place in the South and, you know, in previous years, I said to her, unbeknownst, I said, well, maybe they were not voting to sit at the front of the bus. Maybe they were just voting for a choice, to have a choice, because this was the 70s, and we were like, what, just 10, 15 years out of the civil rights era, and, you know, the back of the bus was full of black people. So, you know, and so I'm looking at the history. You know, we have long voted. And I remember Minister Farrakhan saying that, you know, we had not always been a people who voted Democrat, that at one point we were largely Republican. And so the New Deal came in and kind of changed that around. But overall, throughout our voting history, have you seen, and I'm going to ask this to Brother Jamil first, have you seen any benefit long-term for our people by participating in this process?
Very, very interesting question. I'm going to try to be as succinct as we can because I want to foster the development of these questions that Brother Robert can talk about, this public policy issue that I'm very curious about. But let me just say this, Sister Gidget, you talked about something that's very, very important, and you echoed, I don't know if you knew this at the time in the 70s or if you've learned it since then, but one of our great strugglers in the cause of freedom, justice, and equality, a man who Minister Louis Farrakhan said to him, said, "You are the man," when he shook his hand once. I'm talking about Imam Jamil Abdullah Al-Amin, known before he was known as that, as Hubert, that's H. Rap Brown. And Rap Brown was the author of a book called Die, Nigger, Die. And in the book Die, Nigger, Die, he makes a statement about the purpose of the Montgomery bus boycott. And he says in there that the purpose of the Montgomery bus boycott in Alabama in 1956, led by the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, was not so that we could have the right to sit in the front of the bus alone. He said it was that we were actually demonstrating and struggling to have a choice of wherever we wanted to sit on the bus. I don't know if you had known, but that's exactly what you just echoed in your statement. H. Rap Brown said,
so I wasn't so dumb at 12 after all.
No, not at all. But I'll tell you that that brother said, he said, we want to be able to sit wherever we want to. We just don't want to be limited to be told where to sit. He said the reason why he sat in the back of the bus on those cold mornings on the way to school is because the back of the bus is where the heater was at. And he went back there to sit there. But let me just tell you about politics, and Brother Robert can shed more light on this, I'm sure. In the political process, we must go back to the axiom that Brother Robert quoted from Tip O'Neill, and that all politics is local. Black politics, however, is even more local, but it's local in a dysfunctional way. It's local in a way that causes black people to have an almost messianic expectation of the political leaders that they put into office, especially if they're black people like themselves. And when Brother Robert and I were casually talking about this today, and I want to bring it up now if you don't mind, Brother Robert, black folk in every major city, in every ghetto across this country, where there were black mayors elected after centuries of completely white control, which had landed black people in the ghettos, in the hovels of these cities, we would think that because we erupted in joy over the election of Harold Washington in Chicago, or David Dinkins in New York, or Wilson Good in Philadelphia, or Kurt Schmoke in Baltimore, or Marion Barry in Washington, or Tom Bradley in Los Angeles, or Ron Kirk in Dallas. You get the idea. Everywhere, Coleman Young in Detroit, everywhere that there were black mayors elected, black folks thought that things were going to change radically overnight. Not only did they not change overnight, they didn't change. Because black people have an over-dependence on the whole system that politics is just a part of. the Honorable Elijah Muhammad wrote an article in The Fall of America. There's a chapter in that book called The National Election. Very important article to understand, particularly timely at this point, Brother Robert, as you know. And when you look into this article, he says that black folks have to be worried about how they're going to use their votes, and not because the votes are unimportant at all, but he says this, and I want to quote the Honorable Elijah Muhammad right and exact. He said, "The black man of America has been privileged by the slave master's children for the last century to vote for whites for the offices to judge and rule. This freedom to vote has made the black man in America feel very dignified and proud of himself. He goes to the polls very happy to vote for a white ruler. Today, he is gradually changing to a desire to vote for his own kind for such offices of authority." Listen to me now. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad continues, "We must remember that our vote is strong and powerful only when and where the white man can use it to get in the office over his white opponent. After the election and the victory, there are very few favors that come from his office to the black voters who helped and aided him in getting in the office. Why? Because he does not owe the black voter anything as long as he has to feed, clothe, and shelter him." So just to get you to answer your question, the idea of politics in black America is an idea of a stunted growth of understanding when it refers to civic responsibility. Our civic responsibility is to become a holistic community. And that holistic community then will be able to bear witness that we have a responsibility in politics, but because we've got an economic life, because we've got a social life, because we've got a life of caring for one another, then we can be respected in the political arena. We're not respected because we have not yet first respected ourselves. So that's my answer. I hope it wasn't too lengthy, but I thank Allah for that opportunity that you said. That quote from Brother H. Rapp Brown, and we in the Howard University community claim him almost as one of our own. His brother went to Howard. He went to Southern University there in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Go Jaguars. But H. Rapp Brown came and became an activist with his brother Ed Brown at Howard University in Washington, D.C., and they began moving things all over this country as young students. And I'm sure that Brother Robert will come back to that later, the role of youth in politics and how important that is. So that's
and my children were honored to meet him because they went on a trace of the civil rights movement. And I remember my sons coming back saying that they had actually met him. I think he was owned a bookstore, some kind of store somewhere
right,
in the South. I don't know if it was Mississippi or Alabama, wherever he was. But they actually met him on that freedom tour with the Shape Community Center in Houston, and they were quite taken by him. So, okay, we're going to hear from Brother Robin, and then we're going to check for questions. Okay, Brother Robin, can you elaborate on that? You know, have we benefited from this process at all? And you want to just add to what Brother Jamil has shared with us?
Well, you know, I hate to parse words, but, you know, the question is, what do we define as benefit? Now, it would be very closed-minded for us to say that we have not benefited at all for the political process. We have, for the passage of the Public Accommodations Act, the passage of the Housing Act, the passing of the Voters' Rights Act, the Civil Rights Act. Yes, we have benefited to some extent. The question is, for us, is this, is that when you have a people who lack the knowledge of themselves, don't love themselves, as Mr. Farrakhan was pointing out yesterday in his talk at Southern University, then you've got a people who absolutely don't, are not unified, and don't understand how to use this political process for the furtherance of our people. And, you know, when you have a people who are so sick that their desire is to become part of that which is a decaying and failing society, then you find that what they did was they took that civil rights movement, which really was a fight for equality, equality of opportunity.
That's right.
And they turned it into an integration movement, an assimilation movement, and an accommodation movement. And so instead of us being equal, like all other people, they come to this country, as Mr. Farrakhan points out to us, as immigrants. They stay amongst themselves. They do business in America. They pool their resources. They take those resources, and at a certain point in time, they take their economics and they elect people who are either friendly to their causes or they use their money to defeat those who are enemy or hostile to their causes. As Mr. Farrakhan so aptly was on a tour during the 80s, and it was entitled Politics Without Economics is Symbol Without Substance.
Huh.
And so in one case, you cannot say that we did not benefit from politics. Yes, we did. But, as Brother Jamil is pointing out, there are many other macroeconomic and macro-political factors that we slept on and we've now become a victim of. And so today, even our young people, as excited as they were for President Obama 2008, they are quite disappointed and disenchanted in 2012 as he's coming to his reelection because they did not see the benefit that they thought would come to them, because once again, as the young people are somewhat impatient, so are our people. Sometimes we want instant change, and then sometimes we're waiting forever for change that ain't never going to, that is not ever going to come. So I would say, yes, we benefited. Many of us have become upwardly mobile, and because of our education, we have been able to escape the ghetto. And that is the danger, particularly for the Nation of Islam, because the teaching of Honorable Elijah Muhammad, regardless of your educational level or what class that you come from in Black America or in America, with the teaching of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, you are able to change your life almost instantly. And sometimes what has happened is, unfortunately, after difficulty comes ease, and as the Quran says, certainly after difficulty comes ease, and some of us have become the suburban Nation of Islam. And we forgot about the inner city and the hard times. And so the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has to lead us back out in the street, because we literally have a generation that has become victim or a whole criminalization of a people through public policy, particularly after the Civil Rights Movement, when you had what was called Get Tough on Crime, which was a code word for absolutely criminalizing our race, locking us up and using the prison industrial complex, particularly when you had the deindustrialization of America, the loss of blue-collar middle-class jobs being shipped overseas, and so therefore you did not have the ability to become upwardly mobile with just a high school diploma or GED or no D at all. And so now we find that a whole generation is locked behind bars, and a whole generation, a whole industry has been created and sold on Wall Street from our criminalization as a people. And so once again, we have fallen asleep as a people, and politics has become the politics that we suffer from in this day and time. I hope that answered your question. I don't know if it did.
Yes, sir.
Yes, yes, sir, it did. And we're gonna see if we have any questions back there out there before we continue. So, DJ Caesar, are there any questions on the line or in the chat room at this time?
No, ma'am. Everything is good.
Okay. All right. We're gonna move on, and I'm gonna ask because this is my subtitle to this topic. Where is and who will write the Black agenda? Now, I remember a few years ago, Tavis Smiley had gathered some various who he called Black leaders, and of course, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan was a part of that panel. Dr. Carnell West was a part of that panel. and some more people, and they talked about the covenant with America. And really, I kind of followed Tabitha a little bit on that, and then, you know, I don't know what happened. It kind of just evaporated like mist or something. So, in our last conversation when you were on the show, and I asked you about why do our politicians that we elect into office, Brother Robert, why do they have a tendency to take us for granted and not, you know, really do anything for our community? And you said to me that because we don't ask them for anything and that we don't have an agenda. So my question to you and to Brother Jamil, where is and who will write the black agenda for America, for blacks in America? I'm sorry.
Well, let me just hit this quickly. God has already written it, and He gave it to the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and it's called the Muslim Program.
Come on.
That is the black agenda.
Yes.
Period. Now, that's from my standpoint. Now, there's an interesting article, or I will call it a chapter in Message of the Black Man, called Put Muslim Program to Congress.
Now, if you want
to take that program and put it to Congress, what you have to understand is you have to put it in legislative language. And it has to go through a process in order to be passed. But what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad is saying, in essence, is that you pass the Civil Rights Bill, which he says the Civil Rights Bill and integration will not stand and can never bring independence to you and me, no matter who is president. So he's saying to you and I that, okay, you passed the Civil Rights Bill, but that's not the solution. The solution is this program that I'm giving to you, which includes separation. See, we really got some schizophrenia going on in our community. Some people want reparations, but they don't want separation. And to have reparations without separation only gives them back the money, and no sooner than you get it, then Sprint stocks going to go up. Kentucky Fried Chicken is going to have record sales. Newport cigarettes are going to make a comeback. You know, and a whole lot of electronic goods are going to be sold, and we're going to wind up hungry, naked, and out of doors again, unless we have a program of nation building. It is nation time. So who will write the black agenda? You know, for me, the only involvement in politics I really want is to basically keep these people at bay for right now. But ultimately, it comes down to, beloved, us having to chart a course of independence, like those 74 white men that were invited to the Constitutional Convention of 1787, where 55 of them showed up and 39 of them signed the document called, not the Declaration of Independence, excuse me, the Constitution of the United States. 39 of them signed the document and forged a new nation. That's what I want to talk about. I want to come to a constitutional convention where we write a document. I want to put my signature on it and put my life on the line, my treasure, everything that I have on the line, so we can form a nation of our own, and then, and along with a parallel process of asking for reparations, so we may move on and do something for ourselves and build a nation to the glory of Allah.
Yes, sir, absolutely. Brother Jamil, you want to add to that?
There's very little to add to that.
Right.
The process. No. I think that this is why, and I'm not trying to blow sunshine in my brother's ear, but Brother Robert is a uniquely prepared man. He has been imbued with the experience and the understanding of the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and has superimposed on that bedrock understanding the highest levels of academia. So he understands it as a mental construct and has lived it as his personal history and believes it as his code of faith. When you look at a total human being like that, and I'm not saying that Brother Robert is the new man of the new millennium and all that. I'm saying he's our good brother who is like us but has developed himself more. What he's talking about in this instance is a political maturity, a political maturity that allows us to focus as we should focus and move as we should move. So, no, I don't have to add anything to that. I better wait for the next question because I'm too, like everyone else in the audience, listening. I don't know how many calls are in queue for questions, but I hope because I'm here, I can hope I get my questions in first.
Well, you know, I'll tell you this about our brother Robert Jamil. You know, I am so personally proud of him because it's like as he's watched those children grow up in the mosque, and don't get this twist, I'm not older than Brother Robert. That's my birthday twin, but there's like a 9-year difference between us. But I've watched him evolve as a brother. You know, I've watched him evolve as a father, you know, and as a minister, and I've always watched him. And I don't know why. Allah has kind of commissioned me to kind of like just kind of assign me to Brother Robert for some reason, and that's a whole nother story later on in life. But, you know, to me, he has so well, and we're talking about you like you're not here, and just bear with it, Brother Robert. But he has become so, so knowledgeable, and his wisdom is—it's almost like he wears it like an armor. And maybe I'm the only one that can see that, and maybe because I'm kind of partial towards Brother Robert or whatever. But it's absolutely the truth, because if you've had conversations with him 20 years ago, and the conversations that you have with him now, you hear the wisdom. And so I don't think I would have, you know, really had anyone else to really address this issue. But I'm going to move on. And you know, we talked about, well, you mentioned the Muslim program as really already being the black agenda and that it needs to go into, you know, congressional form and, you know, go through the process of getting passed. But let's look at the people. Because when we look in the nation, and I mean, we don't have to look in the nation. Look on Facebook. On Facebook alone, we have doctors. We have attorneys. We had Judge Maurice Muhammad on the show a couple of weeks ago. We have very highly educated men and knowledgeable men, not educated by the, you know, higher institution of learning, but educated by the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, like you, Brother Jamil, and like you, Brother Robert. And we have so many beautiful, well knowledgeable sisters and brothers. We already have a nation. And we have a nation that is capable of really wanting itself, but there's a difficult time of coming together. And so I watch Minister Farrakhan, and, you know, a lot of people look at it, and they go city by city, and some of them go block by block, and they watching this man move. But that's maybe how some people look at it, but I don't see it that way. Allah did not give it to me to look at it that way. He gave it to me to look at it as Minister Farrakhan is gathering the masses, and what is he gathering them for? And then what have we benefited from the teachers, especially those of us that's been around for years and years and years? We have a responsibility here. So I'm asking, is it going to be necessary that we engage our current government? Are we dreaming or fantasizing that at some point there will be that separation, Brother Robert, but we will already have those in place that are really ready to govern a nation? So I'm going to ask you, Brother Robert.
I can only answer it the way that I know the answer, and that's to say these words. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us.
Yes.
You know, and he says in this illuminating book, Message to the Black Man, you know, he kind of puts forth, it's in the form
of a question, but it's saying, do we have the qualified men and women for self-government? And he answered that question. The answer is yes. We do. We have black people in every field of study. Now, listen to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's words to Minister Farrakhan. He said, the wealth of this world I found, brother, when I got here, and the wealth of this world will be here when I'm gone. He said, but you, brother, through you, I will get all of my people. All of my people. So there's something about Minister Farrakhan. Let me tell you what Mr. Farrakhan, let me share a little table talk with you, what Mr. Farrakhan said this weekend. He said that his father, our father, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, he said his natural enemy was the preacher. He said he absolutely did not like the black preacher because he grew up in an era where the black preacher was the one who settled for the butter biscuit and the piece of chicken at the back door. And he had saw the wickedness of the misteachings of Jesus and its effect on our people. So if you look at it, in Fall of America, you can see the evidence that in Fall of America, when Honorable Elijah Muhammad says on page 106 in Fall of America on confusion of people, he says, there are many of our people, especially among yesterday's leadership, who desire to lead the shackled slave into more secure shackles for the sake of the master and for fear of the master's dislike of the leadership. He goes on to say, this is found among the spiritual leaders more than among the political leaders of black America, which makes manifest to you that spiritual leadership fears not the God of truth and justice, but fears the enemy of God. God is the author of freedom, justice, and equality of man. So the minister said that the preacher, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, saw the preacher as his natural enemy. But he said, I am my father's helper. And so you're going to find me in the church preaching Jesus. Okay? You're going to find me working with the preacher. He said, because I am my father's helper. So the minister is a specially made man by Allah to go to different segments of our community and gather them together for the purpose. I close with this point. Closing the gap is what I recommend to you and the listening audience, that we all go back on a Closing the Gap reading readathon and begin to read that, because the only way we'll be successful is two ways. One, we've got to know the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and we have to learn and follow Farrakhan's way.
You need to say that again, brother.
Yes, we got to know the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, what Brother Wesley and Brother Waqil Allah call Black Muslim Orthodoxy. We have to know our teachings. And then we have to know, the only way we'll be able to be successful and attract our people and have the magnetism to attract our people, we have to learn and operate in Farrakhan's way. His way is the only way that we're able to take the teachings of Honorable Elijah Muhammad and give them life, like the Jesus did at the wedding of Cana, to take water and turn it into wine. There are many, quote-unquote, true followers of Honorable Elijah Muhammad who can quote him verse and chapter and verse, but they couldn't attract flies if they rubbed manure all over their body because they don't have the way and the magnetism and the spirit of Farrakhan. So that being said, we have Minister Farrakhan in Closing the Gap. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad wanted him to invite the intelligentsia and the business people to New York. He, with Brother Akbar at that time, Larry Forrest, brought two plane loads of intellectuals to Chicago. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad gave a lecture and then dismissed them. But it all was just a sign of what Minister Farrakhan's job and assignment would be, which was manifested, one, in the Million Man March, two, in the Million Family March, and three, in the Millions More Movement. Farrakhan has touched every profession, every genre of black life, from the streets to the suites. He has gone from word of mouth to Twitter. That made me a minister. Farrakhan has touched the black accountants, the black doctors, the black police. Brother Farrakhan has been everywhere talking to everybody, and he's affected generations of, and in this, and in this rebuilding effort, he's growing now to close to 40 years in the absence of his father, our father, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Just to answer your question, just yes, we have what we need, and this political season is one that needs to be very much watched, because in truth, the way that our brother's getting beat up, and whether he wins or loses, whether he wins or loses, these Caucasian people are absolutely going to go crazy, because they see his winning as their loss, and they will absolutely begin, particularly in the South, all across the country, Mr. Farrakhan said, they are going to give us hell, and it's going to force our people to get up and do something for themselves.
Yes, sir. Brother Jamil. Brother Robert, can you hear me?
I hear you.
Okay. Did we lose Brother Jamil, DJ Black Caesar?
Yeah, I think so. I'm about to go get his number right now.
Okay. In the meantime, do we have any questions?
Yes, you do have some questions. Let me cut the...
Okay, let's take a couple of questions while we get Brother Jamil back.
410-410, go ahead and ask your question. Make a comment, please.
As-salamu alaykum. This is Brother Vernon Muhammad.
Wa alaykum salam, Brother Vernon.
How are you, my good brother and good sister?
Oh, I'm blessed by Allah's grace.
Wonderful.
And you?
Wonderful. I'm feeling good. Thank Allah. I wasn't on right at the beginning of the broadcast, but the question that has been on my mind ever since last night, and I hope I didn't miss the guest answering this question. I like to ask questions that either put the spotlight on what must be done now or just raise that question. Okay, I heard that, so what now? And after, checking in on the public sentiment on Twitter and on Facebook, as the debates were going on last night, as Minister Farrakhan was speaking from Southern University last night, and on through to today, here's my question for Brother Robert, and hopefully Brother Jamil is on, or he'll hear the question too, because I want to hear what he has to say also. In light of what you just said, Brother Robert, how do we bridge the gap in the communication with the general public, the general people? We know what we have. We know what the teachings say. We know where the best and only solution in many cases lies. It's in the program, as you just said, of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. But the level of conversation and what people's attention is fixated on is just stuck on what's coming out of Romney's lips, what's coming out of President Obama's lips. How do we bridge that gap and make sure that people see and understand? I guess we can't control what they understand, but how do we get them to the point where a part of their conversation now is a comparison, at least, between what they're so enamored with in President Obama and the current administration and the opposing side, Governor Mitt Romney, and the possibility of putting the program of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad onto the table as part of that conversation, because I think that's where the rubber meets the road. And until we do that, it feels like and it seems like we're saying, okay, well, we'll just wait until conditions are such that the people's attention is steered.
I would address that. Right, brother. Is that you, Brother Jamil?
That is me, if you can hear me. Can you, brother?
Yeah, go ahead, brother.
And let me just open up this concert of an answer with this opening act before you get to the headliner. But let me say this to you. Dear Brother Vernon, that was a beautiful question. The thing that comes to my mind immediately and right away is that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is putting the bricks into the wall and applying the mortar of love that will hold us together. What the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has been doing since the beginning of the month of Ramadan, taking us out into the streets on Mondays, Thursdays, Saturdays, other days, and shaking hands with our people, giving them love, letting them know that we come to serve, and we come to serve them with the love that they need from us, not judging them, not condemning them, not arguing with them, not engaging in polemics or forensics with them, but instead saying to them, we love you and we have what we have to offer should you decide to choose it. That is the first step, and it may sound corny and hokey, but it's very true that people do not care what you know until they know that you care. Our mission is to let our people know that we love them. They will respond to it. You ask, how do we put that in front of the people? We have sophistication in all of our electronics. We can webcast. We can email blast. We can social media. We can Twitter. We can Facebook. We can telephone call, cellular phones in airplanes. And while you're skydiving, you can take a cell phone call. The technology is there, but what are we doing to connect with our people on the human level? If we look at the growth of the Nation of Islam, and I'm going to take this opportunity for a footnote, Brother Robert. The Nation of Islam grew exponentially. It grew at its fastest rate when we did not have any of the technologies that we had today. We had to rely on person-to-person, eye-to-eye, mouth-to-ear contact with our people, and as we did, we grew because of the teachings, which is full of love for our people and benefit for our people and success and progress for our people. We made them feel it, and when they felt it, they stood up for it. Today, they can hear it and see it, but often we neglect, as Brother Robert said, while we became the Nation of Islam of the suburbs, the suburban Nation of Islam and not the urban, down and gritty in the neighborhood Nation of Islam. And we began to lose some of our touch. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is bringing that back, and I thank Allah for him. I was standing on the street corner with him the other day, Brother Robert, in your hometown of New York City, and where we were a few blocks from where you grew up, Brother Robert, at the old Polo Grounds on 155th and 8th Avenue. You know what I'm talking about.
Wow.
And as we stood there on the basketball court at the Rucker Playground, you know, I wouldn't give a sucker nor a punk from the Rucker not a dime until I made it again. You know what I'm talking about, Brother Vernon.
Go ahead.
Home of the goat.
While we stood there on that basketball court, and the minister talked to the people, and as he moved through the project, shaking hands with them and embracing them, you begin to get a clue of who this man is. Now, I'm going to sit down and shut up in a minute, but I got to tell you that there were people there suffering from physical maladies and suffering from depression and suffering from sadness and the stress of living every day as black people in America. And when they saw Minister Farrakhan, they began to do like the woman 2,000 years ago did when she was afflicted with an issue of blood that lasted, some say, 12 years, some say 18 years. She had been sick for such a long time. But one day, while Jesus was coming through, she heard that he was coming, and she began to press her way through the audience, press her way through the gathering throng so she could apply her fingers and touch the hem of his garment. Her idea was that when she touched the hem of his garment, she knew that she would be made whole. I wish I had somebody pray with me tonight. She knew that she was going to be made whole. And when she touched him, he said, I felt my virtue leave me. I felt my power leave me. Who is it that touched me? She said, it was I. And he looked at her and said, woman, your faith has made you whole. Your love has made you whole. It's already in the people to do the things that need to be done, Brother Vernon. But their love must be reignited. And their love must be reignited by what Brother Robert said in his previous answer. The example is the example of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. Through Farrakhan, he'll get all of his people. It doesn't mean that Minister Farrakhan will shake hands with every black man, woman, and child in America, but it does mean that millions of those hands will be shaken by those who come in his spirit and in his name. Minister Robert is going in Houston, Texas, and he's coming with the heart of Farrakhan. So there in the 5th Ward and in the 3rd Ward, over there on McAllister and all around there by the Colored Hospital, all over there in Houston, Texas, they're going to be shaking hands with Brother Robert, but they'll be shaking hands with Farrakhan. That's the thing that happens, Brother Vernon. When you go back down to Northwest D.C. on Georgia Avenue near the storied campus of your alma mater, the great Howard University in that city, when you go back there, Brother Vernon, and you shake hands with those people, they're going to know that you love them in the spirit of Minister Farrakhan. This ain't theory. This ain't no daggone graphs on paper. This is the lives of our people. It's flesh and blood. It's life. It's tears. It's sweat. It's the real equity of our resurrection as a people. We got to get up under our people and push them up. That's what I would say to the question, Brother Vernon. I hope you don't mind me taking the time that I did.
Oh, thank you so much, brother. I definitely appreciate that.
And I love that song, too, Brother Jamil. Touch the hem of his garment. Yes.
I know
what they mean. I know exactly what they mean. Come on, Brother Robert, ask for Brother Vernon's question.
The Supreme Wisdom Lessons, according to this great document book, well-sourced book, The History of the FOI, Volume 1, written by Brother Waqil Allah, says that Master Farah Muhammad selected a group of his 25,000 followers to answer the questions to the lesson. But it was the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's answers who were the best, and so therefore it evolved into instruction number one, which tells us to copy Minister Elijah Muhammad's answers and learn them by heart. Well, there was only one minister who is the lead wire. And that lead wire is Minister Farrakhan. He has the juice, but he is able to take that direct current and distribute it to all of us. To the extent that we're connected to Farrakhan, is the extent that we will be able to move our people in the direction that we would like them to go. But I caution all of us to remember Farrakhan's character. When he tells this story often to us, that, you know, the Quran says, and do no favor seeking gain. In other words, whenever he said to us today, matter of fact, just 2 hours ago, he said to those of us who had gathered to see him off before he got on the plane leaving, he told us not to ever do something for money. In other words, don't do good to get paid. Just do good to do good. And if you receive a reward, then all praise is due to Allah. He said, because when you ever do something good for money, it takes away the spirit of the and the energy of the good that you do. So we have to go after our people out of our pure love for them. And out of our pure love for them, they will give us the shirt off of their backs because they know that we love them and we will give our life for them, and they will love us like they love the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. We will and can be and shall be sifted upon his departure. We're going to be sifted. All of us have these little quirks. We have all of us have these idiosyncrasies. And the devil is listening to us on this broadcast. He listens to our phone calls. He reads our emails. He reads our tweets, our Facebook posts, Brother Vernon, and others, to see where are our little nuances in the understanding of the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Not that we won't have different aspects. Brother Vernon is definitely an economic man, not just an economics man, but that's one of his fortes, to build the economy, independent economy for black people and for the Nation of Islam. Sister Gidget says that I'm a political scientist and public policy man, but they're looking to see how they could sift us in our respective things. But we always have to come back to the foundation, which is the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and Minister Farrakhan's way. So I simply close by simply saying that we've got to reassess ourselves as followers of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, because we all have followers. Everybody on this phone and on this radio broadcast has followers. But they will only be Minister Farrakhan's followers to the extent that we are his followers. So we've got to re-examine ourselves and make sure that we are his followers, because he is the way to the Father. He's the one that has the keys to our own salvation. So I encourage all of us to study the minister again and his way. And if we study his way and we are his helpers, then what we want and desire for our people, in the name of Allah who came in the person of Master Prophet Muhammad, in the name of the Christ, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, we will be able to put it over in no limit of time as long as we know his teachings and we follow Farrakhan's way. I guess I answered the question the same way I answered the last one.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Thank you, Brother Vernon, for calling in and asking that question. Let me see if we could take one more question. If there's one, DJ Black Caesar.
Yes, hold on 1 second. Let me look and see. Let me turn the mic on right quick. 770, go ahead and ask your question and make your comment, please.
Hi, Assalamu alaikum, family. This is Brother Jihad from Atlanta, Georgia.
Walaikum salam, Brother Jihad. How are you?
I'm fine.
My
thank Allah and yourself, ma'am.
I am blessed. I'm blessed, brother. You see the company I'm in. Hey, I'm blessed.
Yes, and highly favored, as they say.
Yes.
Let me ask a question to Brother Robert and Brother Jamil real quick. How can we, I see where the conversation is going, so I want to ask this question as far as the nine ministries. How can we revive that nine ministries? Because it seems like the minister was on to something with those nine ministries as it prepares you for independence. And the LOCs, the local organizing committees, do you see us reviving those? And if you do, how do we revive those nine ministries and the LOCs? And I'll listen to your comments.
Well, first and foremost, brother, is that what we have to do is get out of a mosque mentality and get into a nation mentality. The mosque is the spiritual center. It is the brain that controls the nine planets, just like the sun controls the nine planets and the brain controls the nine systems of the body. So, too, the spiritual moral development ministry controls those other nine ministries, ministry of education, ministry of information, et cetera, and so forth, and affects the other 10 task forces that spur or spawn from that. You know, and what has to happen is that, unfortunately, we are stuck, what you call kind of almost like stuck on stupid, whereby we, you know, get into comfortability, the level of comfortability. Why the gap? Why do we have to close the gap? I'm going back to that again. It's because a gap has appeared between us and our leader because we have gotten comfortable in what we think we know, and we have stopped learning and stopped growing while he is growing and learning. This is an international, universal leader for our time is. He's respected all around the world. And that webcast should prove to you he got a call from Mexico. He had Vinny the Vietnamese on there. Think about what I'm saying. He had a man from Africa, Sally from Africa. He had a 15-year-old named Anthony, from D.C. talking about gentrification. I don't know many Negroes 30 years old that can spell gentrification. Talking about that. He had people from prison going through the trouble of getting a tweet to him, Big Meech and these other rappers, and when that segment of Minister Farrakhan's answer was put on YouTube, and that YouTube link went to like this hip-hop website, it got over 200,000 hits the first day. So the point I'm making is that we have to get out of that box, that place we're meeting at that got the shingle off that said Nation of Islam is the nation. No, that's this mosque. That's the spiritual center. That is the foundational place where we go get ourselves cleaned up, and it's the hospital that we get repaired. But the work is in the streets in building a nation. So I think, brother, to revive that, it never died in Mosque 45, and in Mosque 48 in Dallas, Brother Jeffrey Muhammad, our student minister there, they worked in ministries, brother. So we have functional ministries. But what I do agree with, Brother Jihad, is that our outreach, our local organizers, our local action committees have not been as functional as they should be. There's only a few of our ministries that are still working, one of which is the Ministry of Justice that our brother Derek Muhammad in the mosque, who writes articles in the Final Call from time to time and is called an activist in Houston. He has utilized the Ministry of Justice to address many of the injustices in our community. However, the other nine ministries need to be reorganized again because our people are about to be hungry, naked, out of doors. The schools are failing, so we need a Ministry of Education. We're about to be starving on the streets, so we need a Ministry of Agriculture, and on and on and on and on. There's a technology gap, so we need a Ministry of science and technology and all, you know, that, Brother Jihad. So what it's going to take is one, to get out of the mindset that we are mosque, and the mosque is the nation. The mosque is not the nation. The mosque is the atom that sparked in the darkness. But the nation is the whole universe, and we've got to begin to become a universal thinking people and start from our small stage, like Prophet Muhammad's work started there in Mecca, but he's number one in Michael Hart's book, The 100 Most Influential Men of History, because he took tribes and he welded them into a nation. And what we've got in our midst is the modern-day Muhammad. Farrakhan speaks to the hip-hop tribe. Farrakhan speaks to the Bloods and Crips tribe. Farrakhan speaks to the Black Professional tribe. Farrakhan speaks to women-only tribe. Farrakhan speaks to the Panhellenic Council tribe, and on and on and on and on and on. So he's welding us into a nation. So until we think nation, Brother Jihad, we'll never get out, we'll never get those ministries back up again, nor will we be able to have the kind of effective outreach and implementation of the program, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, on a broader level out in the streets. I hope that answered your question.
Oh, yes, it did, Brother Sister Gidget, may I add just a little something?
Oh, absolutely, Brother Jihad.
No, this is not Brother Jihad. This is Brother Jamil. But I wanted to add this, that because Brother Robert, no, he made that toast. I just got a little pat of butter to put on there. I'm telling you that when we begin to bear witness to one another, like what Brother Robert is doing, I don't want anyone to assume for a second that we assume a top-heavy Nation of Islam, a top-heavy clerical class in the Islamic community, a top-heavy preacher's class in the church. That would be a mistake to assume that God is high and his messenger is high and his servants that we see, Minister Farrakhan and others, are high and then we're all low. I want you to know that the indwelling spirit of Allah resides in each Muslim that he created, and every one of us individually, whether we call ourselves that or not, we are Muslims. We are created to submit our will, to do the will of Almighty Allah. When we begin to give each other credit, I could not help, sister, when I was listening to Brother Robert masterfully move through the answer to the question. Here is a man who has that spirit in him. When I know Brother Jihad, I've known Brother Jihad from Atlanta. He lives now in Atlanta, my dear brother from the East Coast. I've known him for over three decades of time. He has that spirit in him. There are many sisters like you, Sister Gidget, and other sisters and brothers who have that spirit in them. We must begin to bear witness that it is Allah, his messenger, and the believers who are our true friends and who we must befriend and who we must work with to reach out to others and let them know the benefit of the power, that it didn't just come from us. We didn't create it, and it's not something that's in Farrakhan that you can never hope to do. Maybe you might not do it on that level, but the same goodness that Allah put in him is present in each and every one of us. And when we can bear witness to that, we can ignite little fires all over. Farrakhan is a towering inferno, but everywhere we can start by tossing a match into the forest of dried leaves and the scattered hopes of black folks, and we can ignite that with the fire of new reality. Just toss a match, and the white man may try to be Smokey the Bear and tell you don't throw a match in there.
No, whatever you do, please, only you can prevent forest fires.
No, we need to make sure we light all the forest fires everywhere. And if the Park Service really was serious, why didn't they buy Smokey the Bear a shirt? They got the man out there in a Ranger's hat and a pair of pants with some suspenders and no shirt on Smokey the Bear. That's low budget. That's just low budget. I mean, there's no excuse.
Well, you know, I want to add something, Brother Jamil, because, you know, and like I said, I'm so honored that you're here tonight. And I know oftentimes you are out and about and you don't necessarily have the opportunity to participate, but we know that you are always with us. But let me say something about nation building. When we started doing these blog talk shows, and I'm kind of answering your question as well, Brother Jihad, you know, I always remind us that we are divinely blessed who have the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And in that acknowledgement of those teachings, we have a responsibility, not just our ministers, not just our captains, our first officers, our lieutenants, every one of us. So we don't have to wait for someone to start to build a nation, because there's a part of the nation that we are trying to build in each of us, and it takes each entity of us to build that nation, Brother DeHart. So you're in the right place, because your sister Gita got you. You know, we're on our way and doing some things, and we are going to implement those nine ministries and probably add a couple of more, because we really have to start looking at our elderly, you know, and our elderly are the wisdom of our community. And when we look at this separation and what's happening to our young black men and what's happening to our young black women and how our young mothers, you know, I was a young mother. When I say I was a young mother, I was a young mother. And we don't get a blueprint to this thing. However, there's a different turn. There's a different atmosphere that is going on. And if we don't start incorporating the knowledge and the wisdom of our elders, so many more of our babies are going to be lost. So we have a work to do, and we have the capability to do it. We just need the unification to make it happen. So, Brother DeHart, I hope we answered your question, beloved. And is there anything else you wanted to ask, Brother DeHart? Did we lose him already? DJ Caesar?
Brother DeHart said he was going to hang up and wait for the answer. He said he was going to
hang up. Okay.
Okay,
no problem. All right, we're going to see if we have one more question. We're going to move on, because I have a couple of more things I want to cover with Brother Robert and Brother Jamil. Is there any? Are there any more questions, DJ Caesar?
Hold on for a second. Let me check. I think he already asked the question, but I don't know if he has another one. Let me open the mic up. 410, do you have a question? Do you have another comment? 410.
Oh, that's Brother Vernon.
Oh, okay. Okay, I guess so.
Okay, we'll move on. Wow, I'm not going to finish again. Okay, so closing the gap, Brother Jamil and Brother Robert, you know, like I mentioned earlier, I see Minister Farrakhan in a different light, and I see the gathering of the masses. But we as a people have been divided by so much, and we know that the wicked slave master used religion as one of the tools to divide us from Allah and to make us believe a certain portion of the teachings or of the Bible, of the scripture. I'll just put it like that. As I see Minister Farrakhan, who is able to communicate with everybody all over the world, are we able to reach across the aisle? I know Minister Farrakhan is, but are we able to reach across the aisle to those Baptist preachers, to those Catholic priests, you know, even to the other Islamic sects, and have them really kind of come together with us and just really understand where we as a people are in this nation, irregardless to what we claim our faith to be? Either one of y'all.
Can we do it? Yes. And I'm going to say this and get out the way for my brother Robert. We can do it. And the example of how to do it is before us in the person of our brother, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. What Minister Farrakhan has done has served as either the creator, the inspired donator of a concept, or the inspired announcer of a project, or Allah put something on his heart like the Nine Ministry that he developed and we can use, as Brother Derek uses so well in Houston. That was a beautiful example. Or Minister Farrakhan, here's another concept that speaks directly into what you just said, Sister Gidget. There's an organization, a fledgling organization that was founded with great difficulty, called the Coalition of African American Muslims. That was the brainchild of my brother Abdul Jalil Muhammad, who you hear every morning on the prayer tsunami line giving the hadith of the day. And you heard the minister mention him during the electronic town hall meeting last week on the 26th.
Mm-hmm.
You see, brother, had a concept that black people who are Muslims in America, regardless of our schools of thought, regardless of our various method, regardless of our differences regarding a tafsir or akida in fine points of the understanding of Quran and Sunnah and Hadith, that we should be seated at a table together and our Islam should cause us to unite to do for our people what only Islam can do. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, if not the founder of the idea, became what Reggie Jackson used to say, Brother Robert, that he was for the Yankees. He became the straw that stirred the drink. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan was the cornerstone of the World Congress of Religions in 1983 when they came together of all religions in the world. And when he gave the keynote speech, it became a lecture for all times, still available on CD and other means from the Final Call in Chicago. When Minister Farrakhan, yes, I had to say that, when Minister Farrakhan spoke at the various different churches, he's spoken at the Catholic Church of the Reverend George Augustus Stalling. He's gone to the Church of God in Christ, where T.L. Barrett is the pastor. He's gone to the Baptist Church, where B. Herbert Martin is the pastor, and Leon Sullivan is the pastor. And he's gone to the various different churches that are non-denominational, like where Sister Barbara King is the pastor, and Reverend Dr. Johnny Coleman is the pastor. And he went there to the Pleasant Grove Baptist Church, where Reverend Jackson in Houston, Texas, is the pastor. And everywhere that he went, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan taught the teachings as the Honorable Elijah Muhammad gave it to him, but he taught it in a way to draw the people up in the understanding of their own teaching, their own belief. And then when they get higher in their own belief, it's only a short distance to reach across the summit of the mountain and clasp hands with the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, that the unity which had eluded us in the past can be achieved. I know that his example is right, but I'm encouraged tonight when I hear from Sister Gideon, when I hear from Brother Robert, when I hear from Brother Jihad, Brother Vernon, Brother Caesar, all of you who are there in the queue waiting for your questions to be answered, when I hear from you in that spirit, I'm encouraged, and I believe, like the old gospel song said, I believe I'll run on and see what the end is going to be. I'm encouraged. I've been running for Jesus, and I'm not tired yet. I feel good. I believe I'll wait on the Lord and renew my strength, mount up with wings like eagles, and I will run and not get weary. I'll walk and I won't faint, because I believe that Allah's teaching has finally come to the fore, and we're going to have the unity that we seek. This is a fired-up meeting that you're having on this radio tonight. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Man, I really appreciate it.
We thank you. Brother Robert?
Sure. I mean, I don't know where to begin, Sister Gideon. It's simply to say that, you know, the only thing that's going to get us through this, as the Honorable Ajahn said, it is our righteousness that will sustain us. That's the only thing that's going to sustain us. And it's our love that will help us progress after we have been sustained. You know, to sustain doesn't always mean that you're going to progress. It just means that you survive. You keep going. But we need some love. We need some real freedom, justice, and equality for one another, and a deep appreciation for one another and what Allah has put in each other for the whole nation in order for us to progress. There has to be a measure of forgiveness. See, one thing that I noticed was is that we put on the Million Man March, but we never participated in it. It was a day of atonement, reconciliation, responsibility. We never atoned. We never reconciled. And we never took responsibility for what we did to one another or to our own selves to put us in the condition that we're in. It's always name, shame, and blame. It's always somebody else did it. No. We did it to ourselves. And when we did not have, when we had unfulfilled expectations of the Million Man March, that all of a sudden it was like someone, you're in the ring, and you hit your opponent with a big right hand like we did with the Million Man March, and we expected him to fall. But no, he didn't fall. He was stunned like hell, but he didn't fall, and he came back roaring with a vengeance, and he took advantage of those unfulfilled expectations that when we came back, then what happened is that by the time we got to the Million Family March, it became for many, unfortunately, not a gathering of the people, but how could we make the money that we missed during the Million Man March because we did not have a T-shirt or concession stand?
My goodness. My
I'm just going at things. And we look at the enemy came into the mosque, and he took advantage of our weakness and our division, and so he broke up the nation. And we became corrupted by our own success. And so instead of looking at ourselves and saying, oh, Allah, I've been greatly unjust to myself, and I do confess my faults, not only the faults, as Honorable Elijah Muhammad told Minister Farrakhan, not only the faults that we have, but protection from faults that we didn't even know we had that we're going to experience in the future. We're at a critical juncture right now. Honorable Farrakhan, the way he's working, the way he's teaching, he's like a time clock. He's like John Cameron Swayze used to say on Wild Kingdom. He's like time that he takes a licking, but he keeps on ticking. You know,
that's right.
And he's ticking right now. And the hour hand is close to 12, and the big hand is like at 11:55. We got to understand that we're going to have to really do some soul searching, because if we don't, then this will be nothing more than a charismatic character cult, and when he leaves, we will break apart if we don't learn to love and appreciate one another. That's why I appreciate what Brother Jamil said. I don't get the big head about it. I know that man loves me because he knows I love him. And our kinship and our friendship is not just ministry. It is a personal experience of two men who realize that we're both flawed, but brotherhood is just that. He is my other, and he is my hood, meaning he covers my back. And I know that if Brother Jamil has anything to do with anything, if I get stabbed in the back, my first thought is not, like I say with you, Sister Gidget, oh, they got me. My first thought is, damn, Brother Jamil must be dead.
That's so right.
I really begin to think clearer now, because it is only when, unfortunately, as I read the scripture, it is only when the Jesus in our midst disappears or leaves us that the indwelling spirit is affected by the outdwelling supreme being to cause an outpouring of his spirit on our flesh, so that we then become not just disciples anymore who have been trifling in the past. We become apostles with the power that's spoken of in John 14 and 12. Verily, verily, I say unto you, he that believeth in me, the works that I do, he shall do also. But it doesn't stop right there. He says, greater works than these shall I do, because I go unto the Father. So it is for us now to begin to understand that we have the ability to be gospel talkers, water walkers, to make the blind see, the deaf hear, the mute to speak, to make the crippled to walk, to be able to feed the multitude from two fishes and five loaves. We have that ability to raise Lazarus from the dead, and we have the ability to heal all infirmities and to cast out demons. But we've got to have the love of God in our hearts, and we've got to follow Farrakhan's way. So I'm ecstatic with this, though I know we're talking about politics. The only way we get tricked is like this. There's an old saying, man. I never forget. I think it was a W.C. Fields movie. I don't know. It might have been. But he said, I think it may have been P.T. Barnum, Brother Jamil. He said, you can't cheat an honest man. The only people that get beat, is somebody who wants something but nothing.
That's a fact, sir. So
you're right, my little chickadee. You are right, my little chickadee.
Yeah. So when I, all the considering everything, I'd rather be in Philadelphia. But anyway, so the point I'm making is to get you is that when I worked in the bank and I was a bank teller, you know, Mrs. Rosenblum and Mrs. Goldstein would come in and they would draw large sums of cash money. And when I asked them, Ms. Goldberg, what are you doing? You know, did your son know that you were drawing this money? Ah, my son, he doesn't need to know anything. You just give me this money, Robert. Next thing you know, Ms. Goldberg running back into the branch, crying, oh, and she walks in with a policeman, or her son comes in and says, my mother withdrew this large amount of money, but the person she gave it to said that she would have got $50,000 if she would just give him $5,000 or $10,000. You understand? Let me hold $10,000. I'll give you $50,000 because I'm going to pick up my $50,000, but I just need just $10,000 right now. It's called a pigeon drop. So
right.
You want something for nothing, and that's how you get matched. That's how you get taken advantage of. And that's the problem today. Politics is that we want something for nothing. But let me simply say it like this and close this point. There's nothing that we're going to have worthwhile that there isn't blood doesn't have to be shed for. I'm not talking about violence, pick up the gun and all that, but there has to be life lost if we're going to have anything accomplished. For instance, we just recently witnessed the death of Buzz Armstrong, Neil Armstrong, who went to the moon, who walked on the moon. Well, you know, people died, man, for the space program to be where the Caucasian could put a man on the moon and bring him back safely to bear witness to the teachings of Honorable Elijah Muhammad that we, in fact, put it out there 66 trillion years ago. But blood had to be shed for the white man to be able to escape during the age of discovery, to escape the cage that we put him in during the time of Muhammad. People died in those voyages going across the Atlantic Ocean to discover the quote-unquote new world and the millions of people that already inhabited it by the time his behind got here. Blood has to be shed. So if we're going to have a nation, some of us have to be willing to live out within our prayer that says, my prayer, my sacrifice, my life, and my death are all for Allah. That way we don't have tricks. This ain't about no tricks. This weekend in Houston, we're having Indaba, a big sit-down to continue the discussion of reparations. And if you feel the way that I'm talking right now, that's just the way they're going to get it. I ain't for no rhetoric. I ain't for no sitting around talking about this, that, and the other. I don't need to pass H.R. 40, which is the bill to study slavery and its effects, therefore, to determine whether or not we get reparations or not. I believe that the statistics and the data is already in by our present condition is bear witness to what slavery has done to us. Now is the time to begin to put together an infrastructure to receive reparations, and reparations not in the form of worthless money, but reparations in the form of material and, but more importantly, knowledge, the consummate knowledge needed to be an independent nation, period. That's what I want from the Caucasian. That's the only thing he can give me, because otherwise the only thing he got for us is hard times and bubblegum, and he's fresh out of double mint.
Okay. Yeah. And you know, I know, and you know, you can't help it because, you know, as I intended to talk about politics, you know, we've really kind of gotten out of that arena, and it still brought me back full circle to what my next question was, because listening to you and Brother Jamil, what I'm gathering is that, like what Minister Farrakhan said, he said that the politics of this world will not work. So I'm going to ask this question, and you know, I just want to know, is it relevant anymore that we participate in this political process? And I'm gonna tell you why I ask that question. Not because of that. I ask that question because, you know, I'm not a political person, really. I'm really not. But I've watched and listened to the president's that I can recall as far as I can remember in my life. And I think the earliest one was, you know, I don't know who came first. It was Richard Nixon and Gerald Ford and Jimmy Carter and, you know, up the ladder from there. And You know, never, not never have I seen a president so disrespected as President Obama. And I mean, and we knew, those of us who really know, we knew that it was coming. But this nation, and when I say this nation, I'm talking about white America. You know, I don't like to use generalities, but that's what I'm talking about. This government has shown me that it doesn't matter how we raise our children, how well we raise them, how educated they are, what offices they hold, we as a people are not respected because of our condition. So here we have a black man who is, you know, supposed to be the most powerful man in the world politically, and he is blatantly disrespected. They called for the death of him, and not only him, but him and his family. Now, I'm sorry, maybe it's just me, but I just got a feeling that if we had done that to George Bush, somebody would have went to jail. And I'm not seeing the significance, because what I am seeing is Minister Farrakhan moving with the masses, gathering the masses, you know, implementing the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and forming and rebirthing a dead nation. And so, should there be an independent Black American Party, Brother Robert?
Well, no, there should be no independent Black American Party, because if you're Black American, you messed up.
Well,
you're
Black,
inferior.
Asiatic,
you can never...
Asiatic Black.
Well, that's what we are. God came and established us. He declared us to be a nation and gave us a flag.
Yes,
We're already that there, sister. The only thing that has to be done is we got to understand is that we're in an embryonic stage. And an embryo or a clot cannot exist outside of a womb. It has to grow to the point where it can exist and survive outside the womb. Right now, we're in a gestation period. We're in a chrysalis where we're making our metamorphosis, but still within this chrysalis. We're still very vulnerable and able to be ill affected by outside and internal forces if we don't develop properly. So I just say, dear sister, that yes, we have an umbilical cord that's attached to America. No matter how wicked she is, we are receiving through the placenta of the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad that which we need for the sustenance of our life and our existence. But at a certain point in time, we're going to cut that umbilical cord and be able to exist on our own. So, yes, to some extent, there's going to be some involvement within the political, economic, and social system of America, but it's becoming increasingly clear by the example that you pointed out, by the disrespect of our brother and his family in the highest office of this country, that in fact and indeed our eyes should be wide open, that as Michael Jackson said, they don't really care about us. And once we understand that, once that's clicked, once white folks stick their foot so far up our backside that we're tasting leather in our mouths, then at that point, we will then know that it's time for the separation. See, God is doing us a favor right now by letting us see in this electronic age what these people really think about us. And so the Democratic Party is like the fox, like Malcolm X said, and the Republican Party is like the wolf, but they're all out of the canine family.
Come on, they're still dogs.
They're still dogs, and they're still fighting us, and they still eat us, whether they do it in little nibbles or big gulps. The fact is still the same. There ain't nothing left but bones. We're a carcass right now, and they buried his bones, and now it's time for the one to come with the master grip that doesn't slip to raise us to the living perpendicular, and I'm just one of those witness bearers, like you are, Sister Gidget, like everybody rank and file Muslim in the Nation of Islam is, that in fact and indeed we're bearing witness that God has visited America. Because you cannot explain this phenomenon anywhere else where this kind of conversation is going on anywhere in America between so-called American Negroes who can hardly speak but a couple words of their ancient language of Arabic, yet are communicating very forcefully, very in a very elucidated, enucleated, and way, an illuminating way that even the enemy that's listening to us knows that he's in trouble and that his days are numbered. We don't have to lift a finger in terms of our physical struggle because God is going to do our fighting for us as long as we will stand up in his name. He will stand with us. And so I just simply say, dear sister, you know, in that regard, I mean, I'm very fired up after meeting and being with the Honorable Louis Farrakhan and being in his presence. And I just wanted to share the spirit that he put in me with those who listen now and will go on the archives and listen to this show later. I'm telling you, dear brothers and sisters, it is indeed nation time, and America is about through. She's coming out of Afghanistan with a tail between her legs, and she will not be able to go anywhere else. And if the Jewish community, who's already ruined this nation through debt and through the printing of fiat money, meaning paper money that's not backed by any precious metals or gold, drags America into war with Iran, the American people will hate the Jewish community even more. So I'm saying straight up to those who even listen to us on the ADL, I'm saying to you straight up, your time is almost up. God is through. He's pulling the cover off of all haters, hypocrites, and agents. And I close with this point, sister. I know I probably did 3 or 4 closings, but let me close with this. All believers are not the same. They are the foremost, and then they are believers. Each will get their reward, but the foremost is indeed that. They're the foremost. And when it comes to disbelievers, they're not all the same. People who are going to taste the fire are not all the same. The hypocrite is in the lowest depths of the fire. Ain't but two kind of people in the mob, believers and hypocrites. The question we're going to ask ourselves today is, which one are we?
Come on.
If we say we're believers, then which one are we? Are we just a believer, or are we a foremost? Anybody can be in the foremost, for the foremost does not say minister, captain, secretary. That ain't in the Holy Quran. The foremost is the foremost. So let us step up if we're going to step up, because those who come after the victory is won. Those who sacrifice after the victory is won is now not equal with those who sacrifice before the victory is won. There's two different classes even within that. Though we all enjoy a certain measure of freedom, justice, and equality. Brother Jamil, I pitched back to you. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. You know what? We have, I don't know how many minutes, but, okay, we have 13 minutes. Okay, so, Brother Jamil, go ahead and elaborate on that, and I'm going to take a question from Facebook, because I promised this person.
I don't want to take long, sister. I just have to. I got to horsey back off of what Brother Robert just said. I know that the time of this evil world is at hand. And today there's some decisions, there's some choices that we have to make. The time of the judgment is now. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad has taught us for a number of years, and some people thought they could go back to sleep because the judgment didn't happen that same day or that afternoon before their shift at work was over. They thought that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's word had no value, no power, no heft, no weight, no substance. But I bear witness with you today that every word that Brother Robert has spoken to you with the passion and with the accuracy that he brought it is true. Our people have some decisions to make. He started his discussion, Brother Robert did earlier tonight, saying that politically black people suffer from schizophrenia. We suffer from a mindset that's divided against self because the agenda for our people has already been put to paper. It is called the Muslim program, what the Muslims want and what the Muslims believe. But our people suffer from so much amnesia, they suffer from so much mental illness and stress to the mind that they actually do not know that they are Muslim. Did I hear you say that some of the 17 million do not know that they are Muslim? you know the rest of the answer. It's because we are blind, deaf, and dumb. People have fed the wrong food when they're babies, and now we fear even though we're a big man. You're looking at a people who are sick and are working out the sickness so that we can survive an hour when even though we are sick, we're still the targets of a vicious and venal murder plot. I ask you to accept your own today. Stand up and be a Muslim follower of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. There's no shame in it. There's nothing that you can worry about. Some of us have already come to realize that if they call you a black Muslim, what's the worst that can happen? You've been called everything else under the sun, and you haven't made a bit of progress. Let them call you a Muslim follower of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and come on, let's get behind Minister Farrakhan. Get some of this earth that we can call our own. Get a program of freedom, justice, and equality. Let us protect and elevate and respect our women as the women of other nationalities are protected and respected and elevated. Let us now do for our children in the way of education. Let us now do for our families that we can take care of our whole elderly when they get old. I'm telling you right now, this is the time for us to come, not walking, not running, but flying to Islam, as taught by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and his servant, his representative, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. That sounds sectarian, I know. It sounds exclusive, I know. It sounds like I'm just talking about one thing. And the reason for that is that's exactly what it is. Accept your own and be yourself. Your own self is a righteous Muslim. That's just the truth of the matter.
Yes, sir. And, you know, and I share with you, Brother Jamil, the passion to reach our people. And if you ever need a reason, look at the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. He has been tried, challenged, broken on the rack, and he stands, and he moves with grace, and he is what Christians would believe as Jesus off the cross, Jesus resurrected. And I don't know what black people are looking for anymore. I don't know if they're looking for somebody to come rolling in on a cloud. I mean, I don't really know. But it's time out for the fairy tales. It's time to realize the man who is in our midst and what he's here for. And this man hasn't done this for 57 years because he ain't had nothing else to do. So it's time for us to open up our eyes and recognize. And I'm going to take this question from Brother Mustafa. And Brother Mustafa says, Assalamu alaikum to the panel. My question or statement, oh my God, Brother Mustafa, okay, there you go, is how can we submit the Muslim program to Congress or to a government that is dying every day? The common black man and woman are not able to see all of the talk, but want to see some action. Which would be putting the Muslim plan into the format of a business plan and present it to those whom the Muslim within the Muslim community that has the capital to buy and develop the land into our community. And, you know, and thank you for your question, Brother Mustafa. And I'm sorry, Sister Gidda don't have her glasses because I'm vain. I don't want to wear them. And before I let Brother Robin, Brother Jamil address that, I know that the Honorable Mr. Louis Farrakhan mentioned that he was going to push back the economic blueprint until Savior's Day. But let's look at Brother Mustafa's question about actually putting the Muslim program into a business plan. That's probably going to be our last question for tonight.
Well, I say to Brother Mustafa, we've already put it in the business plan. It's called a 3-year economic plan. And now is the time for us to implement it. We have a farm in Georgia. We have nearly 1,000 acres in Georgia, and it needs the equipment necessary to properly harvest that particular piece of property. in a way of making an example for all of us to find other farmland, whether it be in Michigan, whether it be in Alabama, whether it be in Texas or other places. So we already have that in place. It's called the 3-acre non-plan, and we can fund that along with giving Mr. Farrakhan our Savior's Day gift so that he may, as he's pushing back the economic talk to Savior's Day, be able to give Brother Dr. Ridgely and those in the Ministry of Agriculture what they need to implement it. That is the beginning of it, I feel, Brother Mustafa. But we talk about putting the Muslim program to Congress. I think that there, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was simply saying, you've already put this Civil Rights Act to Congress. Put the Muslim program to Congress because that thing ain't going to work. He said, but what we need, and notice what he said, what we need is a Muslim congressman, Muslim politician.
Mm-hmm.
So if politics was only thing that politics was, why would the Honorable Elijah Muhammad say that? It was hard for him to recommend that these people be involved in this world of politics because it's what devilishment. It's what? Lying, stealing, and how to master the original man. But if we had Muslim politicians who were fearless to fight in front of the white courts, as he said, then we'd be able to put the Muslim program to Congress because you've got to have a sponsor for a bill to be put before Congress or to put before the Senate. And I'll just simply close by simply saying this. With judgment coming down on America, we make the devil study from 35 to 50 years to call himself a Muslim son. So there are groups of white people, very powerful and high up in this country. Some of them have been occupants of the White House who know who we are and whose we are, and to save what little they can, to salvage what little they can of their civilization, they'll give us whatever we want. Trust and believe that. Allah
yes,
will
sir.
Force them to. But
yes,
we got to be ready and worthy to get it. Ain't nobody going to give us nothing. We got to have to open up the door and get it ourselves.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Okay. We down to the last 4 minutes. Brother Jamil, you want to address Brother Mustafa's question before we close?
Only to say this, that I like his question because it juxtaposes the political program with the economic blueprint. And on pages 172 and 173 of Message to the Black Man in America, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad has penned separate chapters. The first is called Put Muslim Program to Congress. The second is called An Economic Blueprint. These are the foundations for us to be able to compel America, like Brother Robert just said, to do for us whatever it is that we want because we are actively leveraging our own strength, our own power, to make sure that we benefit from the political process, as we started tonight's discussion by saying we have had some benefits. It's been limited because we have not been holistic in our approach to the other aspects of life, which would strengthen our participation in politics and make the political system support our growing economic power and fortitude on the world market. We have what we need. We just now must accept it. You've been running to and fro from pillar to post in an attempt to avoid the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and Minister Farrakhan at all costs. I've got to hold on to this ham sandwich. I need to keep this relationship with this white girl. I got to keep on smoking this weed. I need to keep on drinking this wine. I need to keep believing in gay marriage. I need to keep believing that I have something to do outside of the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. So you keep running from Islam. Stop running. Come home, accept your own, and be yourself. That's all I want.
Okay. Is that it, Brother Jamil? Stop running?
That's it. Stop running.
Brother Jamil?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Yes.
Did we
yes,
lose
ma'am.
You?
I'm
can
here.
You hear me?
I can hear you. Yes, ma'am. I can hear you.
I hear you.
Okay. I need to apologize. I got some text messages, people telling me to stop coughing. I really wish I could. I have allergies. I'm sorry. I really apologize for that. Before we close, I want to say this. You know, excuse me, I live in a small town, very small black population. We have acres and acres and acres of land for sale up here. And we have so many material things that we are hanging on to. If we would pool our resources, we can start. We can start planting those seeds that are needed to build a nation. You can't build a nation if you're not eating. Like Mr. Farrakhan said, I don't care what kind of degree you got, everybody has to eat. That is foremost important. What they are doing to our food is the reason why your sister is up here coughing and hacking today, because of chemical warfare. Now, mine might have came from my doctor, but it's everywhere. We have to start, people. And, you know, I pray that everyone who's listening tonight will follow the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. He's doing many webcasts. He's doing, you know, Ask Farrakhan. He's doing so much to reach us. He is working so hard. And for the length of time that he has been amongst us, we have been so blessed. And let him be your example. Let him be your motivation. I want to thank you, Brother Robert, always for just being my brother and my friend.
Oh, we lost Sister Gidget, fellas. Hey, guys, we're going to end this show right now. The show is actually already ended, but I'm just going to say this. This is a great show. I thank everybody for coming out tonight. I appreciate you, brother. I appreciate every brother that spoke tonight on this phone call. It's been a blessing, guys. You did a good job.
Well, thank you, and good night, my friend. All praise is due to Allah.
Yes, sir. We'll talk to you guys later. Everybody have a good night. We'll be back on next Thursday at the same time. It'll be 8 o'clock, so tune in next Thursday at 8 o'clock. Also, check out my show on Wednesday night at 7 o'clock, where we have all kinds of guests. We have majors. We have independent artists. So if you guys want to show up for that, that'll be great. Thank you, everybody, for coming out tonight. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam.